Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
This is The Takeaway. I'm Tanzina Vega, and I want to start today by sharing some tweets I got yesterday after we asked our listeners and our audience to tell us how they were faring on the island of Puerto Rico after Maria. So this is from Tara. She says, "My father passed away on day 40 after Maria hit Puerto Rico. We knew the post-hurricane conditions could kill him. Unfortunately, we were right." Amanda sent us this tweet. "I have friends who have committed to regularly providing meals in Aguadilla. People there are still struggling. I have friends who live in Trujillo Alto that have resumed normal life." We want to hear from our listeners. We want to hear from you about your stories, about life after Maria. And if you want to share your stories, you can tweet me at Tanzina Vega. You can tweet us at The Takeaway. And turning to today, from hospitals to medical facilities to treatment and Medicaid, Puerto Rico's public health system was failing well before Hurricane Maria ravaged the island. We're going to take a look at those failings and how a lack of funding and planning, plus the remnants of a Category 5 hurricane, has Puerto Rico's health system heading towards collapse. A study commissioned by Harvard estimated 4,645 storm-related deaths. Just to repeat that, 4,645 storm-related deaths on the island after Maria. What role, we'd like to know, has the island's failing healthcare system played in that? An investigation by the Puerto Rico Center for Investigative Journalism has actually uncovered systemic infrastructure problems dating back at least a decade before the storm. Problems like irregular Department of Healthcare inspections at nearly 400 institutions and the total lack of any comprehensive emergency response plan, which crippled facilities and responses in the storm's aftermath. Omaya Sosa is co-founder of Puerto Rico Center for Investigative Journalism, and she joins me now. Hi, Omaya.
Thank you for having me, Tanzina.
So tell me, what was the state of the healthcare system on the island of Puerto Rico prior to Hurricane Maria's arrival, and particularly in some of the more remote parts of the island?
Well, the healthcare system was having problems for a long time now, for decades. Way back in the 70s, we used to have a model healthcare, public healthcare system, and it deteriorated for many reasons. It also got very costly, and the government started privatizing all the system in the 90s. After the privatization of the facilities, we ended up with just one major public hospital in San Juan. So, you know, it's a theme of a lack of resources. It's a theme of a negligence also. And, you know, it's a theme of federal funding.
And let's talk about the impact that this lack of funding has had. We know it impacted folks pre-Maria, post-Maria. How was the infrastructure hit? Your reporting also includes the story of Gaspar Cruz Agosto. I'm wondering if you could give us a sense of what happened with him.
Before the hurricane, as I said, the hospitals were in dire situation. But after the hurricane struck, many of them lost power. Hospitals like the one where Mr. Gaspar ended up in Humacao, the town of Humacao, lost the generators. It was a total mess. All the patients had to be brought down to the common areas in the emergency room, for example, and it continued. The breakdown of the system in the hospital continued so fast that in the end, they had to close down the hospital and transfer all the patients to other institutions that were also pretty bad, maybe not as bad as that one, but certainly were pretty bad. So this happened in the weeks and months after the hurricane. All over the island, generators breaking down in the middle of a surgery, patients being transferred from one broken hospital to another one that was hanging on a thread and that would break down too. So that's the process in which many people got caught and sadly died.
Now, yesterday, earlier this week, we've seen numbers from a Harvard study that brings the death toll of Puerto Ricans after Maria upwards of 4,500 lives or 4,600 lives. Is there any way to track those deaths or percentage of those deaths back to the systemic failings in the healthcare system?
There is, and there should be. I think people have to be clear that the Harvard study is projection. It's not a case by case. It's not that they have 4,600 names of people that died. It's something the government should have done. They do have the resources to do this.
Now, do we know that what specific populations were affected by this breakdown more than others? Were the elderly affected more? Were rural populations affected more by this? Or is it still too early to tell?
Yes, we do. At least at the Center for Investigative Journalism in Puerto Rico, from this sample we have, and we are doing this second phase of our investigation with the assistance of public health experts, we get some trends that are quite consistent in terms of demographics. For example, the median age is 75 years old. Like Harvard, their study says that 30% of the cases they are estimating were due to delayed or interrupted healthcare services. We are finding that more than 60% of the cases we have documented are of people that died either in a healthcare facility or an elderly home that here are considered also healthcare facilities. So it may be even higher, the cost and effect of the breakdown of the healthcare system, than what Harvard is saying.
Oh, Maya, who is responsible for this? And I know that's probably a loaded and difficult question, but the truth is, Puerto Ricans are American citizens, whether they're on the island or on the mainland. Does the U.S. federal government have any oversight in what is happening here?
I mean, we cannot erase the fact that the hurricane was devastating. It was something we have not seen ever. It's a historical phenomenon. It's the first time that a hurricane basically destroys the whole island at once in 24 hours, so there was nowhere to go. It's not like the south was spared and you could take patients to the south and so forth. So, you know, that's a reality. But the days after, and the weeks after, I think the response was so slow that a lot of these deaths really could have been prevented. Seeing spikes of death a month after, 2 months after, that really is unacceptable. And I think the local Puerto Rican government and the federal government both are much to blame for this. They were not prepared. They didn't have a public health emergency plan. The federal government also didn't assign the resources they should have, and they would have assigned to any state, because I'm sure this would not have happened in any of the 50 states. And then in the end, it's a problem of what you're saying. Who is to blame? Well, we are a colony. And since we are a colony, and that for me is one of the most outrageous things of the whole situation in the 21st century, the U.S. still holds a colony. We cannot hold accountable any of the governments. The U.S. blames the Puerto Rican government, and the Puerto Rican government blames the U.S. government. So, you know, it's a very difficult situation, and I think this hurricane exposed what are the real problems and challenges of having this political status we have here in Puerto Rico.
Omaya Sosa is co-founder of Puerto Rico Center for Investigative Journalism. Omaya, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me, Tanzani.
Puerto Rico was facing a major Medicaid funding crisis since before Hurricane Maria made landfall. And now, after the storm, close to 1 million people are at risk for losing their coverage. Medicaid is the main source of insurance coverage for low-income families, pregnant women, children, and people with disabilities. And about half of Puerto Rico's 3.4 million residents receive Medicaid. But because the island is a U.S. territory and not a state, it doesn't get the same federal support that states do, which means that Puerto Rico is at a higher risk for losing coverage and forcing an overhaul of their system. Carmen Heredia Rodriguez is a reporter for Kaiser Health News who's been tracking this. Carmen, thanks for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us, how does the U.S. government allocate Medicaid funding in Puerto Rico versus the United States? Why does it treat it differently?
Sure. So like the states here on the mainland, the federal government and the island's government both contribute to funding Medicaid. But there are a couple of key differences on the island versus a state here on the mainland. The biggest difference is the fact that Puerto Rico has to work with capped funding from the federal government. So in a state, they can essentially access money from the federal government on an open-ended basis, so there's no cap. Whereas in Puerto Rico, there is a cap to the amount of federal funding that they get. So prior to Hurricane Maria, the Puerto Rican government actually got an allotment from the Affordable Care Act to the tune of $6.3 billion that was supposed to last until September 2019. However, even before the hurricane, island officials were saying that this money was going to run out at the end of 2019. 2017. So this island has gotten more money thanks to recovery money that has come in from Congress due to Hurricane Maria. But ultimately, this doesn't change the mechanism that they're funded through.
And how does the Puerto Rican government, how have they been covering the costs both pre and post Maria?
Essentially, it's been coming out of their own pockets. So as we see with the fiscal crisis that they have, they've taken out loans, they've tried doing bonds, they've done virtually everything in their power in order to cover their expenses, and that includes Medicaid.
And the Puerto Rican government, as we mentioned, is planning a Medicaid overhaul. Tell me about what those expectations are, particularly as so many people are at risk to lose their Medicaid coverage.
Sure. So right now, the island is divided into 9 different regions. 8 of them are geographic, and 1 of them serves as a virtual network. And so the insurers on the island are responsible for providing coverage to folks in their particular regions, or regions as they're assigned. Now, officials say that the system has become problematic because it traps people in their regions that may be a location that may or may not have the services that they need. So what they're going to do is turn it into a one-region system where these insurers will have to compete for different beneficiaries across the island. And what island officials are saying is that this will improve the network that people are able to access, because these insurers will have to provide island-wide access rather than just a region. And it'll also improve competition.
Now, is this similar to, and I'm thinking about insurance companies having to compete, is this similar to Obamacare, or is it a different model?
So Puerto Rico is unique in a lot of ways, particularly in their Medicaid program, because they're all managed care organizations, which means that the insurers pull their people together and then pay doctors a set amount of money per patient, regardless of what services they may or may not provide. And this has become problematic on the island because the population is declining due to immigration, and the people that are being left behind are actually a lot sicker and a lot older.
And so tell us about the impact that this change could have. I mean, I've got relatives on the island who, I can tell you, it's difficult to get around the island if you need medical care and you're old and not well. So what impact could this have? Is this better for patients?
So the impact that it'll have on beneficiaries remains to be seen. So ACCESS officials, which is the healthcare administration, so these officials say that beneficiaries will be able to continue their services without any interruptions during this transition. Beneficiaries will also have a period of time where they can change their insurer if they're like between October 1st and December 1st, and then these permanent changes will go into effect January 1st. However, community health centers and physician groups are a little skeptical about how this transition will actually happen. There are a lot of unanswered questions. One of them is, how will the beneficiaries be assigned to the insurers when October 1st comes around? So the island is saying that they're going to auto-assign beneficiaries to particular insurers, but people are worried because they don't want to lose patients, right? I mean, if they lose patients, they lose money. Another question that they have is, how much will the Medicaid program pay per patient for medical services? And will that be enough, right? So there's a physician shortage, and there's also a fiscal crisis. So physicians want to be paid. And if that per member amount drops, we may have another exodus of physicians on our hands.
Carmen Heredia Rodriguez is a reporter for Kaiser Health News. Carmen, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.